Is there anyone on the senior committee we should call out digging them out if need be?
Digging them out of their houses?
Like if someone needs, yeah, is there someone we should call?
Most of the people on the senior committee are in the apartment buildings, which is good for that, as far as that goes. I don't know if anybody in that realm was in a house that would have their own digging outs. But they could be called about if they need anything, like groceries or prescriptions.
Is there someone like the head of the committee we should call?
Yeah, Mrs. Krivitsky, maybe you could ask her to let her know that there's people available. I'll give you the number after this year. Shouldn't be here. Okay. Okay, now the structure of the last week we learned the Hakdama, the introduction of the Ber HaGaila, where he taught us to take an attitude towards the words of Chazal, where we can have a lot to learn from them, seeing that their wisdom, certainly their wisdom in terms of the, as we discussed last week, not just simply the process of an objective science, but the wisdom of understanding, the wisdom which comes from the total personality of Guf and Neshama, of body and soul together, you know, to discern, to understand, and that they are way, 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 way ahead of us, and therefore we need to approach their words with the greatest of care to try to discern and understand the depths of what we were saying. And then really in his introduction, he gave us Exhibit A in terms of the Chazal's description of the change in Dairis, the change in generations. But he's going to deal, the way the book is structured, is it's set up according to seven Be'eris, seven wells, which really, of course, models after the Be'er Sheva, the seven wells that you have in the Chumash by the wells which were dug, Avram and Yitzchak, that you had over there as well. But he uses the structure to address seven different tainus, seven different claims and issues which people would raise with the Chachamim, with the words of Chazal. And the first one, and each one has its own Be'er, each one has its own section which he's going to discuss. The first one is Kibah b'Mishnah v'Talmud Dvarim she'Maisaf al Teiras Moshe, that there are things in the Mishnah and in the Gemara that seem to be additions to the Torah of Moshe Rabbeinu. K'Moshe Tiknu Netilas Yadayim Eruv Tavshilin Ukiyaita Bahem, like Netilas Yadayim and Eruv Tavshilin, which are not found in the Torah. So how did the Chachamim add to the Torah when the Torah says that you're not supposed to add to it? Gam gorum in Teiras Maisha. They also seem to take away from the Torah. How's that? Because it says in the Torah, for instance, Arboim Yakenu. Those are harder to find, right? Most of the time you'll find additions. But the Torah says, give him 40 lashes. And what do Chazal say when a person is Chayav Malchus? You give him 39. So the question is, Bal Taisif and Bal Tigra. Are they adding, are they taking away from the Torah? That's the first question. Okay, so the first Be'er, which is lengthy, deals with this issue, and we're going to approach here today. We're not going to focus specifically like we did last week, and like we will often do, focus on one statement of Chazal, you know, like an agadaic statement, and look at it first with question marks in our eyes, and then and then come to some conclusion. Here we're going to learn some basics. The Maral is going to set up for us some basics in terms of understanding both Bal Taisif halachically, and what we're also going to focus on. We're not going to finish with it. We're only doing a part of this first Be'er. We're also going to focus on the specific types of things that Chazal say when it comes to the legal statements of Chazal, and we're going to probe at least one area called Asmachta, which is very, very ambiguous area in terms of the kinds of things which Chazal say, and we're going to see the Maral's insight into Asmachta, which is a fantastic, fantastic insight and approach to how to understand this kind of a drasha, this kind of a teaching of Chazal. First of all, he speaks about this problem of Bal Taisif and Bal Tigra. And he says, "Ein safek ki dvarim elu nemru shelo be'iyun." For somebody to ask the question of Bal Taisif here would mean, for the fact that Chazal, for instance, instituted Netilas Yadayim or instituted Eruv Tavshilin or something like that, This is something which a person would ask only if they haven't studied the issue properly, intensively. Shalai be'iu. And he says like this, because first of all, let me give you an example, he says. Mordechai and Esther. Okay, forget the sages of the Gemara. Right? Them you think you can have complaints about. Them you can think you can second guess and you can wonder about. You who are oppositional, I'm not speaking to you around the table, right? Those who were raising their claims against the words of Chazal. But Mordechai and Esther, right, they made it into the Tanakh, right? Megillas Esther made it in Tanakh. Now Mordechai and Esther came along and what did they do? They created a Yom Tov called Purim. It's not something which the Chazal created, so to speak, like let's say Hanukkah. This was Mordechai and Esther. This is in the Tanakh. But it's not in the Torah. It's not in the Chumash. The prohibition of Leisaisiv, Bal Taisiv, applied to Mordechai and Esther like it applied to anybody else. How were they able to be Mesakein such a Yom Tov, for example? So the Maral says, and this is a very, very complex halachic sugya, which it's beyond the scope of what we're trying to do here in this shir, to talk about all the halachic permutations of this issue of Bal Taisiv and Bal Tigra. But it will give you the outline of what the Maral says, which is a very, very valid and important opinion within the sugya. It's not the only opinion within the sugya, but we'll also get it for the way the Maral explains this approach, which is magnificent. He says like this, Bal Taisiv and Bal Tigra is not when a person goes and creates a new law. Bal Taisiv and Bal Tigra is when a person adds within a law in the Torah or detracts within a law of the Torah. If a person talks about adding, the classic case in the Gemara is Chamesh Parshios B'Tfilin. We have the Tfilin, and the Tfilin contain four paragraphs from the Torah. And a person says, you know, these four are nice, but I think that also would be a nice thing if we had the Aseres Hadibros also should be in the Tfilin. The Ten Commandments should also be in there. So let's put that in there too. That is classic Bal Taisiv. Or if a person would, Bal Tigra, a person would try to take one out. Or with tzitzis, you know, adding, taking away. That addition and subtraction or detraction within the function and the structure of how a mitzvah is to be performed, that's Bal Taisiv and Bal Tigra that the Torah speaks about. But to create something new, separate and apart, that's not what the Torah was talking about at all. And the way, that's the principle which the Maral lays down. And the rationale for it is very, very beautiful, again, the way he formulates it. And the idea is like this. I'll read to you his words. V'davar zeh hu yaiser garua mishilu layasa mitzvah klal. He says it's worse if a person alters a mitzvah than if a person doesn't perform the mitzvah. Kim yoniach ha-mitzvah v'lo yasa, if a person just leaves the mitzvah and doesn't do it, ein kan rak sheyoshev batal min ha-mitzvah. So he has ignored a mitzvah. B'shevi al tase. He has passively not gone ahead to fulfill a mitzvah. Avol mi shegora min ha-mitzvah hu mishana ha-mitzvah b'maisa. But a person who changes, who takes away something within a mitzvah, so he's altering the mitzvah. And altering the mitzvah, it is much, much more dramatic and much, much more significant than doing something outside. To take the mitzvah, the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us to do it, the way Hashem structured it, and to try to fine-tune it yourself, try to add something within the mitzvah, or subtract something within the mitzvah, that is playing with Hashem's Torah, changing Hashem's Torah, changing the mitzvah. But when a person is coming to address an area that wasn't touched at all, when a person's coming to bring in something new that wasn't there before, that is not an attack, an alteration within the Torah. There, I'm choosing to do something additional in my life. I'm not going and playing and fiddling with the mitzvah itself. So therefore, says the Maharal, the notion of speaking about Bal Taisiv, when Chazal created something, that would be a red herring. We don't find Chazal adding to the Parshias of the Tefillin. We don't find them changing the structure of how a talis is made, of how a pair of tzitzis is supposed to be constructed. Now, Bal Tigra, when you find them saying 39 Malkus instead of 40, now that would be a change within the mitzvah. So the Maral has not explained that as yet. But many of the claims that people would have, for instance, you know, the Erevin and Atilas Yadayim department, to come at it from a claim of Baal Taisif, that is a little bit of a distraction. Now, this is the first Nakuda, the first point the Maral lays down. We're not going to dwell on it significantly. It is a major sugya. We speak about it, for instance, one of the classic Gemaras talks about it when it talks about a Yashin B'Shmini B'Sukkah, person who sleeps on the eighth day of Sukkot, let's say in Eretz Yisrael, he sleeps in the Sukkah on that day, right, where the mitzvah is 7 days. It's not 8 days. That can be seen as perhaps that you're adding within the mitzvah. But on the other hand, the Gemara speaks about the fact that, well, Sukkot is over. Maybe adding within the mitzvah is only during the Yontif, right? During the time, we could say you're adding within the mitzvah and you're changing the form of the mitzvah. But if you extend it another day, it's shalei bizmanai, maybe it's going to be a different thing. So then the Gemara speaks about maybe kavana, grafting it on to the other 7 days would be an issue. And the other thing to consider, which Maral does not invoke over here, but others do, is that at the same time that there's a mitzvah that you're not supposed to add to the Torah, at the same time Chazal empowered the Chachamim, and they told us not to deviate from what the Chachamim instruct. They told the Chachamim to do things. And if they told the Chachamim to do things, and to, you know, to do things to enact, and so on and so forth, so presumably, to them, to the takonos which Chazal made, the prohibition of Baal Tosif is not so easily to be applied. And it is really, even though he doesn't speak it out in this way, the Maral goes on from here, and he defines and he says, and there are really four areas in which Chazal performed. There were four types of things when it comes to, again, this is not agadaic statements, but halachic rulings that the Chazal made. We can speak about four areas. This is his description of it. The Rambam has his own way of describing how these divided up. And he says like this. The first way is, we're going to do it briefly and we're going to dwell on the second. The first way is, Masha Pirshu Chachamim HaMitzvah Shebetayra. When the Chachamim explain something in the Torah, that's what we call Divrei Seifrim, the words of the scribes, which he says is not to say that it is their invention. Like classically, of course, one of the classic examples is that Kiddushei Kesef, right, some people here are learning Kiddushim. Kiddushei Kesef, the Rambam says, is midivrei seifrim, that you're able to marry somebody by presenting them with money, with a ring, with something of value. That's midivrei seifrim. What does that mean, midivrei seifrim? The words of the scribes, it means the Chachamim made it up? No. The Torah says when a man takes a woman, it doesn't explain how that happens. Chazal explained that the term taking, which is used over here, and it's used as well by another transaction, by a real estate transaction, over there money is used, over here money is used. They told us what the Torah meant. They're not inventing something. They're explaining that which is already there. That's function number one that Chazal do, where they simply explain the pasuk. The second, which is what we're going to dwell on a little bit more here today, is what they call them rabbinic creations. However, they brought some kind of a drash min haTorah. They don't say, the Torah is not saying that, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu is not saying you're obligated to do this. We're saying you're obligated to do it. But to some degree, we're going to show you something in the Torah that we can lean on. Something that the Gemara calls an asmachta. An asmachta is something that, you know, to be somech, to pin it on, to lean on it a little bit. Okay? And this again we'll dwell on with greater detail later. That's the second category of which he speaks. The third category is what he calls geder usyog la'Torah, the fences around the Torah, the safeguards, the buffer zones of prohibitions that were created around the Torah. And the fourth category is completely and totally new things that in a certain sense post-date the Torah. Like Megillah was done by Mordechai and Esther, and like Ner Chanukah, for instance, was also done. Not to safeguard a particular mitzvah of the Torah, but something else. The Rambam, when he speaks in Hilchos Mamrim, and he speaks about the functions of the Chachamim, also speaks about these different kinds of roles that the Chachamim play, the traditions that they give over, the drushos that they make, the interpretations of the Torah that they make, and the new takonos, whether they are as the safeguards of the Torah or new inventions like Hanukkah that they were also empowered to make, and we are commanded not to deviate from their teachings in any of these categories. Yeah.
Regarding the Chazal Mefarish, are we calling that Torah Sheval Peh? In other words, are they not really? This is something they inherited from Moshe, or is this stuff that they were mechadish on their own, not in a chiddush in the Purim sense, but a chiddush that they saw a hekesh between two things and they set up them?
At this point, we will speak about them both possibilities being present. There are two kinds. There's a Torah Shebal Peh which is Mekubal, which is accepted, and there's a Torah Shebal Peh where the Chachamim came and they studied and they understood and they arrived at an interpretation. There has to be some interpretation, and the Torah told us to go after the consensus of the Chachamim of our generation as to what that interpretation is. But nobody can accuse them there of inventing. They're studying, they're trying to understand, and this is the conclusion of their understanding. It's a very significant point how much of it is going to be always Makubo and how much of it is going to be discovered. But again, what I would like to focus with on you today, and which is really here in this sense, in terms of the way he develops a chidush of the Maharal, is the attitude to this kind of a thing called an asmachta. When it's not a din d'oraisa, when it's not a Torah law, it's a rabbinic law. It's considered to be a rabbinic law generated, created, brought to you by the Chachamim. However, they find a pasuk to pin it on. And let's just choose an example of this and then talk about what the attitudes of these things would be. And this is one of the examples which the Maharal brings. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, Hashlokais v'akfoshim asurim. If you buy cooked, or not buy, if to take cooked foods that were cooked by non-Jews are going to be asur. Bishul, what we know as bishul akum. Items which are cooked by goyim are not going to be permitted for Jews to eat. Right, we have non-Jewish cooks all the time we see around, and usually when we're speaking in terms of significant contexts, like, you know, cooks for caterers and the like, they're cooking together with Jews, which would be a mitigating factor. Jew somehow participates in the cooking process. This is not because of the issues of non-kosher food. Even if you had 100% proof, no question that this was absolutely kosher in terms of its ingredients, in terms of what it didn't or did get mixed with. However, the fact that it was cooked by the akum, the fact that it was cooked by the non-Jew, in and of itself forbids it, where the cooking is significant, right? The two exceptions in halacha are if it's something which is nechal k'mayshehu chai, something which did not need to be cooked in order to be able to be eaten. So, for example, fruit soup, as an example, would be something you could have eaten it raw. You could have eaten the fruit straight. Because he cooked it, he doesn't forbid it. And the other heter is that if it's eina oila al shulchan malachim, if it's not a food which would be served in a dignified context. Right, if it's something which is very, very simple. Like, for example, there's a difference of opinion about this, but some would say, for instance, and this is the way most paskin, potato chips. Right, potato chips are cooked potatoes. The potatoes need to be cooked. You can't eat them fried. You can't eat them raw. Right, but nevertheless, potato chips is a snack food. It's not a banquet food. It's not nechal, it's not olal shulchan malachim. So therefore the prohibition doesn't apply. Okay, that's a basic halacha, much, much more to discuss from a halachic context. But the Gemara says as follows. Minohani mili, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, daf lamed zayin. How do you know that shlokos and kvashim are forbidden, that these cooked foods are forbidden? Because the pasuk says, this pasuk is in the beginning of Parshas Devarim, where it describes the Jewish people, in the middle of Parshat Tzvarim, which describes the Jewish people's march to Eretz Yisrael from the desert. And they come upon a nation, I think this is by Edom, Ochel ba'kesef tashbireni v'yachalti umayim v'shosisi. Umayim ba'kesef titinli v'shosisi. It says, I want you to sell me food and I'll eat it. And water, you'll sell me as well and I will drink it. The Gemara says, so the Jewish people were proposing, in other words, look, we're not coming here to be in any which way parasites. We're not going to take anything away from you. We're not going to draw upon your resources. Farkared, view this as a business opportunity. You're going to have a whole nation of people passing through who are willing to buy their food from you. So the Gemara darshins. Ma'amayim shlo nishtanu ayideo. What does it say? Food and water. So we say, as is typical in drushos that you make in the Torah, food and water, they're said in the same phrase, in the same breath. So let's compare the food to the water. Just as the water, lo nishtanu ayideo, water isn't changed by the fire, right? Even if you do warm it up, it's essentially the same water. Afshlokais shlo nishtanu ayideo. So to the food, also has to be something that isn't changed by cooking. If it's something which is changed by cooking, that we can't buy from you. That's what the Gemara says. It says, ask the Gemara, but hold on. Does the Pasuk say anything about air? Does it say anything about fire in the Pasuk? It just says food and water. It doesn't say anything about cooking. Elo derabanan, ukras machta ba'alma. Says the Gemara, you're right. The whole thing is midrabanan. We're just sort of bringing an asmachta from the Pasuk. Here you're talking about getting food from Goyim. And the Pasuk says water and food. So we want to say simple foods like water, that would be what would be okay, but otherwise not. But it's not a real drasha because the Torah doesn't say anything about fire. Okay, now. So what is the Pasuk for? If it's not the Eiraisa, if the Torah is not saying this because it's not saying it clearly enough, so then what is the role of the verse here as well? What does it mean? Oh, so the Rabbanon created the prohibition. Bishul Akum, food cooked by Goyim, is not usher from the Torah. The Rabbanon created the prohibition. The rabbis created it. But they bring you a pasuk to boot. What's the role of the pasuk? What's the meaning of the pasuk? What's the purpose of the pasuk in such a situation? So in this, there's a machlokas rishonim. There's a difference of opinion of the Rishonim. The Rambam himself takes the following approach. This is the Rambam in his introduction to his Perush HaMishnah. And the Rambam says like this, that the Rambam here is dealing with the definition of a halacha l'maisha mi-Sinai. What's a halacha l'maisha mi-Sinai? Certain things, the Gemara says, it's a law that was given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai. Aren't all of the laws given to Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai? When does the Gemara resort to call something a halacha l'maisha mi-Sinai? So the Rambam's position is, halacha l'maisha mi-Sinai is something that is 100% Torah Shebal Peh, that has no verse that is used for it at all. It's not an explanation of a verse, and it doesn't even have... The Chachamim don't even bring a hint for it in the verse. And so he says, Kol inyan she'ein lo remez b'mikra v'lo asmachta v'yefshe l'lomdo b'achas hamidos. Something which doesn't have a hint in the Pasuk and which doesn't even have a drasha, and it doesn't have an asmachta. It can't be used with one of the 13 midos shatar and drashas, ben, one of the principles, the hermeneutic principles, whatever that's supposed to mean, but that's the way they translate it, right? That from where you're supposed to be able to read psukim, like Kal Vachomer, etc. So when you have nothing in the Torah Shebichsav to hang it on, so then it's going to be called a halacha l'maisha mi-Sinai. That's all that you have. So for instance, the fact that an esrog is the type of fruit that we use for when the Torah says take a nice fruit, pre-Eitz Hadar, that is not a halacha l'maisha mi-Sinai, because that's to explain what the nice fruit means. It's this kind of a nice fruit, even though it doesn't say in the Torah esrog, but the fact that it is an esrog is an explanation of the verse which is there in the Torah, and everybody uses an esrog until this day, and so on and so forth. He brings other examples of that sort. And he says, things which have a remez b'mikra, or an asmachta, which don't have a remez, or not an asmachta, they call them halacha l'maisha mi-Sinai. Ulefikach, and for instance, therefore, k'shomarnu shiurin halacha l'maisha mi-Sinai. The Gemara says that the shiurim, you know, that you have a kezias of this, and the revius of that, and so on and so forth, the amount that it takes to fulfill a mitzvah, or to transgress on a prohibition, or to create impurity, tumah, and the like, that it's halach l'maisha misinai. So the Gemara asks, what are you talking about? It's a pasuk. Why is there a pasuk? Because the pasuk says, Eretz chita, sa'ora, gef, and teina, rimon, eretz eshem, and udvash. Good Gemara for Eretz tu b'shvat. It lists the seven species of the land of Eretz Yisrael. And the Gemara says, each one of those species has a halachic sister, right? The chita, the wheat, is kezayis, dogon, whatever it is, lebeis hamenuga. There's a shear, the amount of time a person would spend in a house that has tsaras, is the amount of time it takes to eat, not kezayis, but whatever is pras, amount of a meal of wheat bread. Right? So wheat is the benchmark. We get that from the pasuk. And so on each one of them. So ira, a bone the size of a barley seed is going to be metame. Is going to be metame a person. So each one of those things in the pasuk. Answers the Gemara, no, it's a halacha l'maisha misinai. Elo hismichum l'pasuk zekein simen. It's an asmachta. What's the asmachta? So listen to how the Rambam describes it. As a simen, as a sign. In English we would call it a mnemonic. Kidei sheyishmerum v'yizkerum. If you want to figure out how am I supposed to remember all these different shiurim for all these different things. So you say, look, let's think of that pasuk of the Shiva Saminin. And it's a great memory tool. You'll be able to think, or you'll be able to summon back to your mind all of these things. This is not what the pasuk means. Says the Rambam, whenever it says asmachta ba'alma, that is that there's really no real intention of the pasuk to say this. But you want to somehow have a memory tool, and what's the best place to look for a memory tool for a halacha of the Torah? In the Torah Shebichsav. This way you can dress everything around the Torah Shebichsav. But it's not that we're suggesting that this is what it means. We're just going to use the verse in this way. This is what the Rambam says. Now,
so then say that you have no leg to stand on to bring any kind of drush in connecting the two and yonim in any way. You wouldn't come up with a nice drush that says that the Tumah and Tahara is related to the Shiva Minim.
You could still, because you could say, well, the Rambam doesn't acknowledge it, but say, but look, you know, you could come up with a simon here, you could come up with a simon there, but they chose to use this as a memory tool, and therefore there might be some connection. But you won't find the Rambam, honestly, you won't find the Rambam doing that. When you propose that, you are influenced by the past 500 years. You are influenced by Maral type of thinking, where every time they do it, there's some integral connection. And the Maral takes great, great opposition with this position of the Rambam. Because, to him, it's not going to be just, so, like, as we would say, a nice drash or something, you know, a homiletic, something to say at a Sheva Brachas, right? But to him, it's going to be essential. We don't use psukim like that. If you're using the pasuk, it means because that's what the pasuk means. And here you get where the Maral is at the same time teaching you how weighty to consider the words of Chazal and how weighty to consider the words of the Torah itself. He's not comfortable at all with it. Now, the Maral is not the first one. The Maral is not the first one to take this position. It will take me a moment just to identify it, but there's a Ritva in Rosh Hashanah. I haven't seen it in. Oh, here you go. Okay. Rosh Hashanah Daf Tav Zayin. Okay, here you go. This is in the sugya of Shofar and Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah Daf Tav Zayin Amud Aleph, and he says like this: Kol ma sheyesh lo asmachta min apasuk. Whenever you're going to bring an asmachta, what we call this, sort of like, you know, it's not a din d'oraisa, it's not a Torah law, but there's a pasuk that you can sort of lean it on, pin it on. Whatever is like that, heir HaKadosh Baruch Hu sheroi lases kein. What Hashem is doing is, He's giving you a flag. He's giving, calling to your attention, you know, this is something to consider doing. El shelo kava chava. But Hashem didn't say that it is absolutely obliged. Umasar lechachamim. And He gave it over to the chachamim. In other words, He's putting the hint in the Torah. I'm not saying it out, because I'm not saying that you have to do it. But I'm bringing it, I'm indicating it here, that it's something to consider doing in the future. We do these things all the time with people around us, with our children, with our spouses, with our employees, with our friends. There's sometimes we say, I need you to do this. And there's sometimes where we, so to speak, drop a hint. We would be very pleased if the person picked up on the hint and did it. But we're not going to come right out and say that you have to do it. And here, given the fact that the Chachamim are going to be in the later generations, the ones who are charged with being the principal interpreters of the Torah, the principal readers of the hints, so there we're going to say, don't legislate new things, don't make things out of cloth, whole cloth out of thin air. Look at the hints that HaKadosh Baruch Hu dropped and see what to do. V'zeh davar borer ve'emes. And the Ritva continues to some degree polemically. This is true and clear. V'lo k'divrei ha'meforshim, not like the commentaries read the Rambam. Shehu k'derech simen shenosnu chachamim v'lo shekavonas ha'Torah l'kach. That it's just some kind of a simen, some kind of a sign, something that they'll use as a memory tool, but the Torah had no intention for this. Chas v'sholom, heaven forbid, yishtaka adover v'lo ye'omer, let such opinions sink into oblivion, never to be said. Shezu das minus hu. This is heresy. Aval ha'Torah hi'ira v'kach u'mosra chiv adover l'kavu l'chachamim im yirtu. The Torah brought it out, and they left it up to the Chacham. They said, when you feel, if you feel that it's appropriate to fix this as law, as obligation, go ahead and do so. As it says, Vasisa al pi adavar asher yagidu lecha. You should do according to what the Chachamim tell you. Ulefikach timsa ha-chachamim nais mechomach im raya o zecher o asmachta lidivere min ha-Torah. And that's why you'll find the Chachamim looking for asmachtos. Not as cheap hints, so that you'll be able to remember it. But kaloi marsheinam echatshim davar melivam. They're trying to tell you, look guys, we're not making this up. The chol Torah shebal peh remuzah b'shebet Torah shebechsav. Everything in the oral Torah has some hint, some indication in the Torah shebechsav shehi temima. That is complete, it's perfect. Torah Hashem temima, the Torah shebechsav says it all. V'chas v'sholom shechaser achlum. Heaven forbid that it's missing anything. This is what the Ritva says. Now, in a future installment, right, stay tuned, one of the things the Maral, of course, has to deal with is what happens when you have two opinions of the Chacham that argue upon each other. How do you deal with that? Right? Eilu ve'eilu divrei Elokim chayim. Like, what does that mean? How are we going to deal with words of Chachamim that conflict about what the Torah means? That's a basic, basic issue, a fundamental issue in understanding the words of Chazal. However, in the meantime, right, and it's especially exciting when one of them calls the other an apikoros. You know, that's like especially enjoyable. But in the meantime, we have such arguments. We know that there are such arguments between great chachamim and great sages, which we'll have to figure out how to digest. But lemaisa, that's what we have. So we have here a very, very stark difference of opinion as to what an asmachta is. Is it sort of a hint that you're using after the fact, or did the chachamim look in the Torah to draw out hints that then they chose to legislate to make into reality? Yeah.
I don't think he called the Rambam himself.
He didn't refer to the Rambam.
Right. He referred to the
people, commentary.
The commentary.
Who says this?
Right.
And the Rambam says this. Yeah.
He didn't say the Rambam at any point. Never.
He never mentions the Rambam.
So how does he? Okay. So.
And to be you know, to give a little context. You know, the Ramban, in his Pirush on the Torah, many, many times argued equally forcefully with the Rambam in the Moreh Nevuchim. Ramban took many, many issues with the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim, where he viewed his things as heresy. One of the famous ones, for instance, you know, the reason for Karbonos, right? Karbonos was to wean the people from Avodah Zorah. So the Ramban says, give me a break, no way. I mean, Cain, when he brought a Korban, he was weaning himself from Avodah Zorah, right? Cain and Hevel, they were weaning themselves from Avodah Zorah. There was no Avodah Zorah yet. It was their children who invented that wonderful thing. Right? So what are you talking about? And he argues on it. The Ritva wrote a little book called the Sefer HaZikaron to defend the Rambam from all the accusations of the Rambam. Right? So it's a little Sefer called the Sefer HaZikaron, which just addresses those places where the Ramban attacks the Rambam. You know, so yeah, he doesn't mention the Rambam's name, and the Ritva was not of the opinion that the Rambam was a heretic. But this interpretation, he was very, very, very much, very, very strongly opposed to. Okay, so he presented this way. The Torah puts it in, and it left. It's saying, "I'm telling you this, and let the Chachamim at whatever time come and draw it out and figure out and decide to codify, decide to legislate it." This is not the position of the Maharal. This position of the Ritva is taken by others. For instance, the Shaloh Hakadosh, right, who was in fact somewhat contemporary, a little bit early, a little bit later, I think, the Maharal, again, excuse me, my history brain is never very good, right? But the Shaloh HaKadosh, Rabbi Yishaya Levi Sharwitz, also a fundamental source in Jewish thought, very much takes this approach of the Ritva, HaKadosh Baruch, who puts hints as to the kinds of things that he wouldn't mind if we did. But he didn't say that you have to do it. You'll decide when you're ready for it, you'll decide if you have to do it. The Maharal says something here, which is, in a certain sense, a little bit more of the rationalist approach of the Rambam, but on the other hand, not willing at all to accept that Chazal are just using this as a memory tool. Chazal are learning from the Torah. And let's take Exhibit A, the example which we brought. Maharal brings, I think, four examples of such halachas, and let's show the attitude which he tries to do. He says, "Ein ha-peiru she'i ha-kosu zecher u'melitza b'vad." Remember the case? Water and food you'll buy from the goyim. So the Gemara says, from here we know that you can't buy cooked food from goyim. Why? Because the water isn't cooked. Says the Gemara, where does it say in the pasuk anything about cooked? Right, that's the issue. Says the Gemara, it's an asmachta. So he says, it's drabonim. Drabonim, you're allowed to buy food which is cooked by goyim. So he says, don't say that the pasuk is just saying, you know, it's a hint. Rak shalom du gzeres chacham in ha-mikra. They made a gzera and they learned it from the pasuk. How's that? Why does the pasuk say food and water? It's in one breath. The food is like the water, like fruits and vegetables that haven't been changed, like water which wasn't changed. The pasuk is speaking naturally. If you're looking in the Machon Yerushalayim edition, the Harbin edition, it's page Lamed Vav in the second column. The pasuk is Urcha de Milsa Ka'amar. She'uma shinivdeles me'uma acheres. A nation which is separate from another nation. Right? Two separate nations. Kemoshi Yisrael nivdelem kaluma. It's like the Jewish people are separate from other nations. In derech lios lem chibur v'shitov ima uma shinivdeles me'uma. It's just not usual for them to be buddy-buddy. They're distinct nations. They have their own character, their own identity, and their own place. And therefore, ein konim zemizeh rakdover shalay nishtana. So they would usually only buy from each other something which is impersonal. You know what's impersonal? Water is impersonal. It's a raw material. Grapes, carrots, tomatoes, you know, it grows from the ground. You didn't put your imprint on it. You didn't do something to it. You didn't make it with your bubby's recipe. That's the normal thing. Nations which have an arm's length relationship with each other don't share recipes. They don't give each other home-baked cookies. It just doesn't happen. We're coming through. And remember, you know, it wasn't just that the Jews didn't want to have to do with the people of Edom. They were trying to tell the Edom, don't worry, you won't have to do with us either. Right? We're trying to say, we're just going to walk through the territory. We're not planning on living here. We're not planning on taking advantage of you. We're not planning on having anything to do with you. You can rest easy. So the kind of things we're going to buy water and food. What does that mean? Real basics. You don't say water and foie de gras. You know, that's not, you know, it's when you say water and food, you mean
commodities.
You mean basic commodities. You don't mean fancy things. If you meant something fancy, you would say, no, wine and foods, right? And when you say wine and foods, so what you're thinking about is a little steak, you know, some nice delicate goose, you know, something like that, some salmon, you know, nicely poached, you know, that goes well with a white, you know, that's what you're thinking. When you say water and food, what you're thinking of is rations. You're thinking of basics. You're thinking of staples. That's the language. So, that's the way the Jewish people were speaking to the Edomim. There's no halacha here. The Torah is not saying, you can do this, you can't do that. The Torah is just giving you the conversation between the Jews and these people. Mikol mokaim lamdu. But nevertheless, what do you see from here? Shederach ha'uma liyais nivdelis min acheres b'tikun eichel. That there is a certain arm's length which applies to food preparation when you're dealing with nations that are trying to keep each other at arm's length. U'mizeh lamdu gzerazois. And from here the Chazal learned how to institute their own barriers to create between the Jews and the nations, not as minhag, not as what people would do, but as what people must do. Shem gazral bishulei goyim liyos hevdel ha'uma me'uma. They said, don't eat, Jews, don't eat from the food of the nations of the world that's cooked, that's prepared. Why? Because you see that when nations are trying to keep their distance, they limit themselves as to what they eat from each other. And being that we want you to keep your distance, so we've learned from the Torah that food is the great communicator, the great breaker of, you know, reducer of boundaries, reducer of these kinds of senses of distance, making things come closer to each other. Therefore, be careful. That's the idea. That's how we derive it from the pasuk. So you understand what he's doing. It's not a hint. It's not something that's made up after the fact. And he's also not claiming that the Torah is telling you to put in place an isser of eating one from the other. The Torah is showing you how people interact. And then when you're trying to legislate about interaction, go to the Torah. See what the Torah tells us about how people interact and use that information to make sensible legislation. Torah-based legislation. The Chachamim drew their wisdom and their insight from the Torah, and this is where they drew this specific insight from.
So they found the principles from a pasuk in the Torah,
right,
and based on that principle would legislate.
That's right. This is what we loosely call today Das Torah. Right? There's a term which is used, Das Torah. It's a term which has its, which is found in the Gemara, right? But it's not used in the Gemara necessarily in that way at all. It's more of a modern, early 20th century. There are, you know, some earlier occurrences of it. Das Torah means where you'd ask somebody not a halacha question, but you ask somebody, tell me, what do you think the Torah would say about this? What would it say about, I don't know, who knows, the cartoons in the Danish newspaper, right? You know, and a thing like that. It's not a halachic question, let's say. Huh?
Be careful.
Be careful, right. When I heard that the Muslims were having a boycott on Danish products, I was like, my real question was whether it included Ruggles. But what's the Torah view of this? So if a person studies the Torah, and the way they look at things comes from the way the Torah describes things, so that, you know, you pick up things where the Torah's not telling you halacha. The Torah's just sort of dropping insights in from the way you do, just like if two people talk to each other and they're not telling somebody to do something, but you can still derive the way they think. So the same thing happens there. And a person who's completely steeped in Torah, a person who's a Talmud Chacham, you know, up to his ears, so then the way he thinks is going to be so influenced by Hashem's Torah. So So therefore, even on issues of nuance, not issues of halacha, you'll want to hear their attitude because it'll be formed by this. And this is Exhibit A. The Chachamim wanted to make a barrier between the Jews and the nations of the world because they were worried there was a time when it was showing possibilities that the nations were interested. There was possibilities of interaction. What should we do to put in place? That they chose to put a barrier specifically in food is because, look, they saw in the Torah such an insight. So again, you understand. You have two extremes. On the one hand, you have the Rambam who says the Torah had nothing to say about this. This is not based on the Torah. This is completely the Chachamim's invention and thought. And they just wanted to pin it on the Torah because it would be nice if everything had a hint in the Torah and it would be a good way to remember it. On the other extreme, you have the Ritva, the Shalah, who say, the Torah is telling you this halacha. Except it's not coming right out and saying it. Because it's not saying it's mandatory, it's obligatory. It's saying it as, you know, we're hinting to it. When you feel that it should be done, you'll make it done. The Maharal is not saying that the Torah is alluding to this halacha. That the Torah is hinting to you, you know what, you should institute this halacha. The Torah is talking. And from the way the Torah talks, we see a certain attitude. And from that attitude, we're going to go further and do things. And he brings a number of examples, and they're all beautiful. They're just terrific examples of this kind of way of thinking. But let's choose another one, and the next one in the Maharal. And it's especially nice to choose it because it's from the Parsha which we read in the Torah yesterday. And it's the basis for the halacha of Eruv Tavshilin. To review, the rule of Eruv Tavshilin is as follows. On Shabbos, you're not allowed to cook. On Yom Tov, you are allowed to cook. But you're only allowed to cook for that day. On Yom Tov, you're home all day, you can't say, you know what, it's great, I can now make bake a cake for my daughter's birthday party tomorrow. You can't do that. You're only allowed to bake for Yom Tov. You're not allowed to bake for the next day. However, what happens if Yom Tov comes out on Friday? You won't be able to cook on Shabbos. On Yom Tov, you can only cook for Yom Tov, so you won't be able to cook for Shabbos either. So what are you supposed to eat on Shabbos? All right? Keeping a cholent in the crock pot from Thursday to Shabbos can be very, very dangerous. That's what they refer to as the nuclear option, right? What are you supposed to do? So the Chazal established something called Eruv Tavshilin, which says that if a person starts, so to speak, on Erev Yom Tov, and they start preparation for Shabbos. What we usually do is we put aside a challah or a matzah, and we boil an egg, and we say this is the beginning of our preparation for Shabbos. Then on Yom Tov, you're able to continue, and you're able to cook for Shabbos, because you are continuing the preparation which you started on Erev Yom Tov. That's something which Chazal said, which Chazal permitted. Now, where did they get this from? Says the Gemara in Be'ah. The Perek Be'ez the Be'ah. Eruv Tavshilin. Minoani Mili, where does this come from? So the Gemara brings a source from yesterday's Parsha. The yesterday's Parsha was about Erev Shabbos. Remember? Mon is coming. Except on Friday. On Friday, Moshe Rabbeinu said to the Jewish people, you're going to get a double portion. And Es Asher Toifu, Eifu, Es Asher Tavashlu Baselu. What you want to bake, bake. What you want to cook, cook. Amar Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer said, "Mikan shein oifin ela ala ofui, vein mevashlun ela ala mevushal." When it comes to Yom Tov for Shabbos, you can only bake when something has already been baked. You can only cook when something has already been cooked. From here, you see a basis for Erev Tavshilin from the Torah. Now, Erev Tavshilin is Rabbanan. This is just a hint from the Torah. What's the nature of the hint? What is the nature of this asmachta? Does the pasuk say what it even sounds like he's talking about it saying? So he explains. Ubir zegamke. Kipshara kosuv mashakof al haloshein. When the pasuk says that which you have to bake, bake. Right? Now that's an interesting way of expressing itself altogether. Why don't you just say bake and cook for Shabbos? No. It doesn't just say afu hayom. Bake today. Bishlu hayom, cook today. Rotsa lomar, es asher tirtzu lefois, afu hakol hayom, kom leches atiyah. When we say asher tofu eifu, we say, everything which needs to be baked, bake. Don't say, I'm going to start today. I'm going to start baking today, and then I'll finish the process tomorrow. No. Everything which you need, bake today. Everything which you need baked, have it done. Everything which you need cooked, have it done. Why? Because there's no excuse. I started, let me finish. No. You got to finish the whole thing. But from the fact that the pasuk is saying that and saying do it and finish it, that's showing you it's telling you that, you know, there's a difference between starting and finishing. Yes, here the pasuk is saying that that difference in this situation doesn't make a difference. When it comes to Shabbos, finish it completely. But why am I even addressing it? You hear what the Maharal is saying? By the verse saying that which needs to be baked, bake, instead of just saying bake today, it's saying don't start baking, but finish. Why does the pasuk have to tell you finish? Because I might have thought that finishing is not so bad. Once you already started the preparations, continuing them may be okay. You can't say you didn't prepare for Shabbos. You did prepare for Shabbos. Says the pasuk, no. No preparations for Shabbos take care of happen on Shabbos, even the end. Even the gemar din, so to speak, even finishing the job. That's what we see from the pasuk. But the pasuk is speaking about Shabbos. On Yontiv, maybe, therefore, we would say where the Isser is pared back, and you're dealing only here with the problem of doing from one day to the other, well, you shouldn't start, but you can understand that there's a difference between starting and finishing, and they will allow you to finish. Pasuk's not saying that. The pasuk is not teaching you that specifically, that it's going to be okay on Yontiv, but from the fact that the pasuk has to address that don't even finish it, it shows you that there's a difference. And therefore the Chachamim could say that on Yontiv, where you started before with the Erev Tavshilin, and now you're just finishing, that is a fair mitigating factor. You understand again what he's doing? We're seeing the principle. It's like the Gemara says, if I could share a very, very Talmudic example. This is the opinion of Rashi. I'm sure those of you who are studying the Daf Yomi, we came across it very, very recently in the Daf Yomi. But it comes across in many places. The Gemara says a rule that halacha kedivrei hamachria. That when you have two opinions, and then you have a third opinion in the middle, we rule like the third opinion. However, the Gemara makes a condition to this. And again, this is Rashi's understanding of the Gemara. The only time we'll rule like the third opinion is if the first two opinions, when they presented their opinion, created sort of a tier structure in their position. In other words, the Beis Hillel says it's permitted not only in this circumstance, but even in that one. Let's say whether during the day or at night it's permitted. And Beis Shammai said, no, whether during the day or at night, it's forbidden. So comes along Rav Gamliel, and he says, or whatever it is, he comes along and says, during the day it's permitted, but during the night it's forbidden. Since Beis Hillel already recognized that there are levels, there's a difference between day and night, and so did Beis Shammai, but they said, it's a difference, but it don't make no difference. So then somebody can come along and say, that difference does make a difference. And if it's in between the two, we'll accept it. But if Beis Hillel just said forbidden, and Beis Shammai said permitted, and comes along somebody else and says, well, during the day it's permitted, during the night it's forbidden, we say we don't rule like him. Even though you're the UN, you're the peacekeeper, you're the nice fellow in the middle. Because since nobody recognized such a position, then you're on your own. Your position is between the two of them, but they didn't recognize your position. If they said night or day, then they were recognizing your position and saying, but we don't agree. So then you could rely on them. That's essentially what Maharal is saying over here. The Torah recognizes a position where there's a difference between starting and finishing. So now we can go and say, you recognize that position? In another circumstance, we're going to legislate it. But it's based on the fact that the Torah recognized such a middle position. This is the way it is. So you see now, and we'll conclude with this. There are other examples the Maharal brings. Each one is great, but it teaches you this notion of asmachta, take it more literally. Chachamim aren't pulling things out of thin air. The Chachamim, even the creative legislation which they had, they built it on opinions and insights which they saw in the Torah. When they say it's based on this pasuk, they mean it's based on this pasuk. Not that the Pasuk legislated it. We're doing it. But I want to show you where my wisdom comes from. Where I'm thinking of this idea to say this kind of a thing. And that is his approach to the Asmachta.
Okay.
Good. Let's go. So, you. Weather.